We're back. This is Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. Now we're going to see if we can get John O'Hara on the phone. John is the keyboardist and arranger of Jethro Tull, who are performing in Chicago tomorrow at the Chicago Theater. It's an 8 p.m. performance. Jethro Tull has a brand new album out called Jethro Tull, The String Quartets, with the Carducci Quartet, John O'Hara, and Ian Anderson, all being part of that recording, done in a centuries-old cathedral in Europe. And we're going to start off with a song, first of all, and then we're going to get John O'Hara on the phone to talk about the new album and, well, whatever else is on his mind. This is the String Quartet version of Locomotive Breath, an old favorite in the Jethro Tull catalog, simply called Loco on this recording. We'll be back with John O'Hara after this. Reimagining of Locomotive Breath by Jethro Tull. That's off their latest album, Jethro Tull, The String Quartets, with the Carducci String Quartet from Europe, John O'Hara on keyboards, and Ian Anderson adding a little of his own personal touches there as well, as he should, since it is a Jethro Tull album. All right, we've got someone on the phone right now. Who is it?
Hi, is that Tom?
Yes, it is.
Tom, it's John O'Hara calling.
Hey, John, how are you? Good to hear from you. Thank you so much for being part of today's program. I had Ian Anderson on the phone to talk a little about this new project, the String Quartet album, on Tuesday, and I wanted to get your opinions on it and play a little more music from it because, well, this is your wheelhouse, so to speak, as the arranger of the project.
First of all, I know you've been with Ian for a while. How did you connect with Ian Anderson? And prior to that, were you a Jethro Tull fan?
Well, funny enough, I was aware certainly of the material, Jethro Tull material and catalogue here in the UK. And in fact, I used to play one or two of the tracks in a band that I was involved in. So, yeah, I was very much aware of the band and, you know, what they were doing in England at the time. How did I get involved with Ian? Well, I mean, the legend goes that
okay.
Dave Goodyear, who had just started working with Ian, our bass player, that is, our new Jethro Tull's new bass player at the time, was mentioned that I could play the accordion and mentioned that I was a keyboard player. Now, Dave Goodyear and I have known each other for a very, very long time because as a composer and a musical director in the world of theatre and television, I've often used Dave Goodyear as a bass player in my bands and in my outfits. So that relationship has been going on for some years. So consequently, I got introduced to Ian through Dave and I took this journey over to Ian's studio in the UK. And he asked me to play, what did he ask me to play? I think he asked me to play Boris Dance, which is an accordion piece. And then he asked me to play Locomotive Breath so that he could see whether I could play piano and to see whether I could play accordion. And at the end of that, he said, well, yeah, now listen, we're going to America for a 3-week tour. Do you want to come? And I said, oh, yeah, why not?
Was that your first trip to America?
No. I've been to America several times before that with various outfits. I used to work for a contemporary dance company in London called Ballet Rombert, and we used to tour certainly New York State and a few times into Manhattan. So I've been to the States.
Okay.
I've been to the States a few times.
I remember seeing Tull many, many, many years ago during the hard rock, I guess you would say, era of them back in the 70s.
Mm.
And now I've seen the group a few times in recent years, and it's a complete different animal. Of course, this one is very theatrical, and I'm wondering if that has a lot to do with your being part of it the last few years now and having the theater background.
Well, I don't know if I could take credit for that. I think Ian's always had let's call them Jethro Tull, has always had a theatrical element to their performances. Yes, it's been very much on the rock side, on the progressive rock side, but there was always a theatrical side. If you look at Passion Play, if you look at some of the antics historically that some of the musicians used to get up to on stage, people appearing in wetsuits, telephones appearing on stage, answered by Ian Anderson, etc. I think that's always had Tull's always had a theatrical element to it. But you're quite right, over the last few years, particularly last year, we toured a rock opera.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's no secret that I've written several operas myself, and Ian isn't... I don't think Ian's ever heard any of that material, but he's aware that I work in that genre. Maybe subconsciously there was a moment when he thought, that's a good title, Jethro Tull, the rock opera.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I can really take credit for that. I think it's always been theatrical, Jethro Tull.
Now, you have a lot of classical background, a lot of theater background, as we've established. But you also, prior to Ian, have worked with other rock bands. And one in particular that you've done in the past has been The Who. You've worked with them. Tell us a little bit about the Quadrophenia Project and how that came about.
Well, that was a very special event. I can't really say that I was a member of that band. I was, you know, I was working with one or two of the people that played with it. You know, John Rabbit Bundrick on piano. Spent some lovely times with him. He's a very generous man. Sat at the piano and showed me a lot of what he does inside that band. And playing with Pete Townsend's brother also, which was great fun.
Oh, Simon?
Yeah. And then finding myself sitting next to Pete Townsend, looking at the score that I'd slaved over for several months of his iconic album, Quadrophenia. The story was, let's try and put this album on stage. I think probably, you know, certainly influenced by the success that Tommy had had as a theatrical venture. And so there you go. We try to retell a story or create a story that's inside, that's woven inside that album, woven inside this labyrinth of songs that that make that double album, Quadrophenia. Discovering, you know, what does Quadrophenia mean? I mean, who are those four guys? You know, what's those personalities, the personalities of the band that we know as The Who? And we tried to put that on stage and explored it musically, explored it through choreography, explored it through a little bit of additional text, but not much. Most of the storytelling was told through the through Pete Townsend's lyrics and through the songs. It was a fabulous, fabulous venture to work on. It toured the UK and was had fabulous audiences. We had scooters outside the theatres. We had regular standing ovations throughout the UK. But sadly, it didn't travel. I was always hoping it would travel to the States, but it never did.
Any chance that may happen down the road?
Well, I think it would. At this stage, it would probably take an awful lot of money to relaunch it. We had a rather wonderful U.S. producer who was putting a lot of money behind it. And I think he was also hoping that it would go to the U.S. But the truth be known, I would suggest that it would need to be remounted and reworked, and that would all take an awful lot of money. So if there's somebody that's got a rather large bank account, then maybe it will end up going on tour to the U.S.
Okay. Do you see that happening? As we mentioned, you did the last tour was Jethro Tull, the rock opera. But it wasn't as theatrical as, say, the Quadrophenia was by any means. So do you think you will see at this point, Ian seems to be doing an awful lot with the old catalog of saying, hey, let's try something like Quadrophenia and see if we can bring it to life with a multi-member cast?
Well, that's interesting you should say. There's nothing in the pipeline, but for sure, I know that Ian has been approached in the past. Say, for example, to stage a version of, say, Thick as a Brick, to tell a story within that music.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that at the moment there's nothing in the pipeline, but who knows in the future? As you pointed out, although it wasn't, the rock opera was certainly not as theatrical. It was pretty much within the band with some additional video footage.
Mm-hmm.
But Quadrophenia, as you say, was fully staged with an onstage ensemble of actors and dancers and an onstage band. It's not happened yet with Jethro Tull, but who knows, maybe in the future.
And especially Thick as a Brick, with Thick as a Brick 2 out now, which is a new original project, you could have a two-act play and really bring it home.
That's true. That's very true. And that, of course, Thick as a Brick 2 just, you know, tells the story of what's happened, you know, several years, 20 or so years later. What on earth has gone on?
What happened to Gerald? What happened to Gerald?
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. My guest is John O'Hara. He is the arranger keyboardist with Jethro Tull. They are coming to town this Saturday, tomorrow, at Chicago Theater, and it's an 8 o'clock show. It's a hits-formatted show, but they also have a brand new album out. We're focusing on the album today, which is called Jethro Tull, The String Quartets. Let's play a cut from that right now, and I'll be back in just a few minutes with John O'Hara to talk about the String Quartet project. reworking, a reimagining of the classic track Living in the Past, done by the Carducci String Quartet, along with Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull and my guest this afternoon, John O'Hara, who is the keyboardist and arranger of the band and of this project. John, let's talk about this new album. Now, how did this come about? This is unique, and it's not surprising because Jethro Tull's music has always lent itself to classical arrangements, always lent itself to multi-string instruments, but this is pretty different. I think the hardcore Jethro Tull fans are going to have a shock when they hear this. I mean, I was not sure what to expect. What was the challenge for you? Tell me about how this came about.
Well, I have to say that Ian was very gracious because he basically gave me a free hand on this project. It was on the back burner for a considerable amount of time. I'd obviously was scoring orchestral parts, but we came over to the US and we did a small tour with a string quartet on stage with the band, and it seemed appropriate to give that quartet a little solo spot within the set. And so there you go. I start constructing Heavy Horses, original title, A Song from the Wood and the Heavy Horses, which on the album, on the string quartet album, is called Songs and Horses.
Mm-hmm.
That quartet, that particular arrangement, has been around now for maybe 3 or 4 years. But that was the germ of the idea that sort of suggested to us that maybe this material, the Jethro Tull back catalogue, could actually be heard with just the quartet. So I start looking at pieces of music like Velvet Green. We have orchestral performances of Aqualung. Mm-hmm. And I decide to do a new introduction by using that four-note theme at the beginning of Aqualung. And I sort of look at it and try to do it in a quasi-J.S. Bach fugue arrangement. And that led to the version that we now hear on the string quartet album.
His feet spin it. Bad intent. Snot running down his nose. Greasy fingers smearing shabby clothes.
Timeless Jethro Tull classic Aqualung, done as a J.S. Bach fugue and retitled appropriately Aqua Fugue, is off Jethro Tull, the String Quartet's album, now out. My guest this afternoon here on Midwest Beat is none other than John O'Hara. John is the arranger of this new String Quartet album. He's also the longtime keyboard player of Jethro Tull, who will be in town this Saturday, tomorrow, for an 8 p.m. performance at Chicago Theater. Now, tomorrow's show is an actual Jethro Tull full-on rock concert, but the new album is strictly String Quartet. You were saying, John, that Ian Anderson had given you pretty much carte blanche on doing this new album, correct?
Ian was so gracious, because during the process, I'd be working at home on my studio at home, devising new material to go into the album on a piano, taking it into a notation software. And then the only way I can communicate that over to Ian is by mocking up some demos with some string samples on the computer, emailed it over to Ian as an MP3, and he would almost always just say, yep, great, I can't wait to hear it with the real players. And so I just went on to the next arrangement. Why don't I do Living in the Past just purely as a pizzicato movement, a la Tchaikovsky? And again, Ian said, yep, great, that works lovely. Change key a few times. Yep, that sounds lovely. Can't wait to hear it with the real players. So, you know, he really was quite open to all of my ideas. You know, if I wanted to give the violinist a cadenza at the beginning of Farm on the Freeway, he said, yep, great. How do you know he can play all of that? And I said, well, he's a good player, and I know that these things are physically possible to play on the instrument, because that's, you know, I learned all of that when I was a student, a music student. And he said, okay, fair enough. And of course, when we get to the recording session, Matthew, the violinist, Matthew Denton, just plays that opening for Farm on the Freeway absolutely stunningly. I mean, I just was open-mouthed when I heard him play what I'd written. And I thought, you're an amazing musician to be able to play that straight off. I mean, he had a quick look at it beforehand.
Right.
We did three takes, and that was it. It was done. All over. Emma on cello for Locomotive Breath, you know, that rather difficult cross-stringing that she's got to do for her cadenza at the beginning of Locomotive Breath. Ian said to me, how do you know she can play this? And I said, well, you know, that's why you've asked me to do this, because I do know that it is physically possible. So we said, great, can't wait to hear it with the real player.
I'm glad to hear that, because Ian always has been very much in control and micromanaging things. I was wondering if he gave you that carte blanche to say, go, John, and have fun with it and come back with something great.
He absolutely did.
Now, you picked songs from throughout the Jethro Tull catalog. Are there any that you tried that just didn't work out in the string quartet format?
Well, to be truthful, no. There was one or two of my suggestions that Ian didn't want on the album, and I think that was mainly to do with, you know, every songwriter, I'm sure, has material that they like playing or that they, you know, feel proud of, and sometimes they'll have material that they are less proud of or don't like particularly. Mm-hmm. So one or two songs that will remain nameless.
Okay.
Didn't actually make it past my few sketches on the piano.
The one that shocked me when I saw it on here was Bungle in the Jungle, which is called Bungle on This, because it's rarely played live on stage, and I've always gotten the impression from Ian that he doesn't care for that song. So seeing it on here in a project like this kind of took me by surprise pleasantly.
Well, that track, there's a story behind that arrangement. Mikey Downs, our front of house sound engineer, he always used to tell me, you know, Bungle was a real success in America. It was the Americans really enjoyed that track. I think it was maybe not quite so successful, I'm not sure, but I believe it wasn't quite so successful over here in England. Whether Ian likes it or not, I'm not sure. I've never really spoken to him about it, but I plowed through an arrangement and did an MP3 file, fired it over to him, and I got a good response. You know, it was mm-hmm. sort of, yeah, that's great, let's do this. So I think mainly I was probably looking at writing that arrangement, believe it or not, for the American fans. I mean, there's several people I've spoken to over the years. The end of concerts and what have you, and there's a couple of people I speak to on email, and that particular song certainly does come up, that title does come up.
Yeah, it was a huge hit here, and like I said, we don't hear it very often on the stage. I was never quite sure why, but I always got the impression that Ian didn't care for it, but obviously he gave it his blessing. It's on this album and done very, very well.
Thank you.
reimagining of Bungle in the Jungle off the new Jethro Tull, the String Quartet's album. I'm Tom Lounge, as you're listening to Midwest Beat. My guest is John O'Hara. He is the keyboardist and arranger of Jethro Tull and the guy who pretty much put this album together, which features Ian Anderson, of course, of Jethro Tull and the Carducci String Quartet. And John,
one of the things that surprised me on this as well is when I've listened to string quartets in the past, and I'm not an expert by any means, but I don't remember there ever being vocals. It's almost always instrumental. And yet I didn't expect to hear Ian singing, but he does on a handful of songs.
That's right.
But they're abbreviated vocals. His part is not so much the lead singer. It's kind of another instrument, his voice, working with everything going on.
That's well observed. I mean, that is exactly the approach that Ian took. He was basically using his voice as another instrument and you know, melding it into the sound of the string quartet. I mean, I've got really nothing else to say except, yeah, definitely, he was treating his voice just as another instrument. And of course, hearing, for example, in Aqualung, hearing we do a slow version of the verse in Aqualung, I think that for me anyway, that's very poignant to hear Ian singing that material in that way. For me, it's very powerful, very moving.
The thing we haven't talked about, and of course they're a major part, is the quartet themselves. Have you worked with them in the past? Give me a little background on them.
Now, this is a special quartet, Carducci Quartet. Just purely by coincidence, they are based here in the West Country of England, in the west of England, southwest of England. But they are big players. I mean, they are on the international stage. They are regularly being brought, their material is regularly broadcast on the BBC over here in the UK. At the time we got to know them, they were doing all the Shostakovich string quartets. And those pieces of music are astonishing and take the quartet needs to have huge vitality to make that music come alive. It's very energetic, very powerful Russian music. And they were getting fantastic reviews. And lo and behold, I had the radio on, and there they were on the radio playing one of the Shostakovich's. And it turned out that we know, Ian and I, we do know, the brother of the first violinist.
Hmm.
He actually is currently, he's also a musician, but he's currently running a taxi service and drives us in a van to and from London Heathrow on a regular basis. And he just said, oh, my brother plays in a string quartet. And said, what's the quartet called? He says, the Carducci. I know the Carducci Quartet. So it was a small circle. So it was very easy to get hold of Matthew and then ask the quartet to come and play along. But they really are world-class musicians.
Yeah, they're brilliant. It seems like all the pieces just fell in place like this was kismet, this was destiny.
Well, it really does feel that way, doesn't it?
Lastly, you recorded in an old cathedral. Is it an actual working church? And why? How did you find this particular locale?
Okay, so we recorded it in two venues. We had a day in the crypt of Worcester Cathedral. That's the underground bit, if you like. The almost a secret cavern underneath the cathedral. A very special place, and Worcester Cathedral has got a very long reverb, as you may have heard on the recording.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a public building, and it's open to the public throughout the day. So while we were recording, certainly above us, there were members of the public, and at 12:30, just before lunchtime, there is a service that happens, a religious service. So we were just getting ready to stop to not disturb the service when we suddenly heard, well, I heard on my headphones that the ribbon microphones that we've just mentioned were picking up the priest upstairs starting his service through the microphones.
Wow.
So when I got the files back to the studio at home and I was listening back to the material, I suddenly heard, "In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the..." I think, my goodness me, we've caught the service on the microphones. We won't be able to use that take.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. And then the beautiful church in the Cotswolds in Sapperton, which was just, it's no longer a consecrated church, but it's this beautiful architecture with some very, very ancient trees in the graveyard surrounding ground around it, was just an idyllic place to be. And certainly for the first morning, it was beautifully quiet. But as the afternoon approached, the wind picked up. And of course, you have these kind of beautiful stained glass windows that are all a little bit drafty. And then you suddenly start to hear the wind and the rustling of the trees outside all being picked up by the microphone. So I had to be very, very careful in editing to be able to make sure that I could get rid of all of that rather distracting noise. So I was grateful that we did three takes of each piece and was able then just, if there was a rustle of the leaves, I was able to go back to that little section in another take and superimpose that section.
Okay, it seems like the rustling of the leaves might fit on Songs from the Wood, but nothing else. Well, John, thank you so much. I appreciate you giving me your time today.
My pleasure.
How do we keep up with you? We obviously have the Jethro Tull website, but how do we keep up with your various projects and what you're up to?
Well, good question. I have a website that's under construction, but unfortunately I won't be able to give you that at the moment. But I can give you, if you're familiar with SoundCloud, then there's some material of mine on SoundCloud. And I think the easiest way to find me, because, of course, if you type anything into a Google search with my name, you'll come up with a very, very famous American author.
Right.
And a lot of the American author, and not an awful lot of me. But if you type into SoundCloud on the SoundCloud page, if you typed in my name and put in Bristol Composer, then I think that will take you to my SoundCloud page. And I put, there's material on there. There's a piece of music, for example, that I wrote last year for a Shakespeare play. There's some material that I've written for some television. There's some of my opera work. So there's a variety of material on that page. There's not an awful lot, but it gets updated regularly. So,
okay. Are you linked to your stuff through the JethroTull.com page?
No, I'm not, actually.
Might
That's
be an
a
idea.
Very good point. I ought to do that, shouldn't I?
Yes, you should. It'd be easy to find you then.
Yep, absolutely.
Especially with this new project.
Yes, definitely. So, well, I always, not to be self-deprecating, but I always wonder who on earth would want to listen to my material. But there you go. I appreciate that.
Well, if it were easier to find, you might find more people would.
Yep, that's true.
All right. Well, again, thank you, John.
Thank you for your support, Tom.
Not a problem, John. Happy to do it. And I'll see you guys tomorrow night, 8 p.m. at Chicago Theater. Travel safe.
Thank you, Tom. Look forward to it.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now. Bye.
I'm Tom Lounges, and you've been listening to my conversation with John O'Hara. He is the arranger and keyboardist of Jethro Tull. Again, they'll be here tomorrow night at Chicago Theater downtown at 8 p.m. And we're going to leave this segment with another song from the Jethro Tull String Quartet album. This is one that John had mentioned early on in the interview. It's a reworking of a classic Tull song called Velvet Green, and it's been retitled for this particular album as Velvet Gold. I'll be back on the other side of this song. Stay with us on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thank you. coming at you off the new Jethro Tull album, The String Quartets. That's a reimagining of Velvet Green and retitled for this one with the String Quartets as Velvet Gold. Jethro Tull in town tomorrow night. I will be there at the Chicago Theater to see them. I don't think I've missed a show with Jethro Tull in many, many years. Old friends. And John O'Hara, that is the keyboardist and arranger that we had on the show. I'm very thrilled to have him on for the first time. Of course, Tuesday night had Ian Anderson on the program. He's a often frequent guest here on the show. And we talked to Ian also about the concert and the album we just heard from, the String Quartets album. I'm Tom Lounges. If you just tuned in, this is Midwest Beat. We have got a show, as I promised at the top of the hour, jam-packed with music and guests. Coming up in just a little while, we've got Bridget Rios Purdy calling in from California. She is a gal that you're not going to want to miss if you're a fan of the blues. And we'll tell you more about that in a bit. And in just a few minutes, I've got some of the guys from Open Your Eyes. I've got Ryan and Justin in studio with guitars. But before we get to them, I want to remind you that there are a lot of things that happened on this day in history, believe it or not. You know, with everything going on in the country today, a lot of people are talking about the history and the importance of it. And I always believe that that history is something we need to remember, because if you can't learn from history, you repeat your same mistakes. Like Mick Jagger, for instance. I assume he will never shoot himself in the hand again, but it did happen. On this day in 1969, Mick was accidentally shot in the hand while he was filming the film Ned Kelly, the Western, in Australia. So just goes to show you, I'm sure Mick is going to learn from that mistake all those years ago. The very same year on this day as Mick was shooting himself in Australia, Woodstock, the music and art fair in Bethel, New York, was winding to a close after three nights with a mid-morning set by none other than Jimi Hendrix and the Band of Gypsies. And Hey Joe was their absolutely last song. So that's how Woodstock ended. Ringo Starr, you may have heard of his little band called the Beatles. Well, on this day in 1962, Ringo made his debut with the Beatles at a horticultural society dance in Birkenhead, England. He had only had a two-hour rehearsal with the group and went out on stage and played. And that was the first ever appearance of the Beatles featuring John Paul George and Ringo. And on this day in 1956, a double-sided number one single from my favorite artist, and that is Elvis Presley. The songs were Hound Dog and Don't Be Cruel. And we're going to play that right now. This is going back to Elvis's number one double-sided single, Hound Dog and Don't Be Cruel, with Don't Be Cruel.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love, baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Don't stop thinking of me, don't make me feel this way. Come on over here and love me, you know what I want you to say. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Why should we be apart? I really love you, baby, cross my heart. Let's walk up to the preacher and let's say I do. Then you'll know you'll have me, and I know that I'll have you. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love, oh baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love, oh baby, it's just you I'm thinking of.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Elvis Presley. We did a special show on Wednesday. It was the last show with Dan Clark, my engineer of all these years. And it was a good show to go out on with Dan. And I know he's going to pop in from time to time and visit us. But Elvis, of course, dead 40 years as of August 16th. And we did a whole memorial show on that. And I remember exactly where I was, and we talked all about that. So I thought it was appropriate on this day in history to pick Elvis's music as opposed to playing a Beatles song or a Mick Jagger song or even a Jimmy song. No offense to those artists.